The Capital Investment Committee for April 19th is called to order. This remote hearing is taking place in accordance with House Rule 10.01. It's being live streamed by the House Public Information Office. Mr. Wilcox, please take the roll.
Chair Lee.
Lee present.
Lee present. Vice Chair Murphy.
Murphy present.
Murphy present. Representative Erdahl.
Present.
Erdahl present. Representative Igbajay.
Present.
Igbajay present. Representative Byrd?
Present.
Byrd present. Representative Davids?
Davids present.
Davids present. Representative Frankie?
Frankie present.
Frankie present. Representative Freiberg?
Present.
Freiberg present. Representative Hansen?
Present.
Hansen present. Representative Hewitt?
Present.
Hewitt present. Representative Lilly?
Lilly present.
Lilly present. Representative Lucero?
Present.
Lucero present. Representative Moran. Representative Pearson. Representative Pearson. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh present.
Raleigh present. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen present.
Rasmussen present. Representative Ryer.
Ryer present.
Ryer present. Representative West.
West present.
West present. Representative Zhang.
Here.
Zhang present. Representative Pearson. All right, Mr. Chair, we do have a quorum.
Quorum is present. Chair Murphy, may I have a motion to approve the minutes for Thursday, April 7th?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move approval of minutes for Thursday, April 7th as printed.
Chair Murphy moves approval of the minutes for Thursday, April 7th. Any discussions? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes for Thursday, April 7th are approved. Good morning, members. I hope everyone had a good break with their family. Today, we will continue to hear informational bill hearings with amendments offered for reference only. And the first bill on the agenda today is Representative Hansen. We don't have a bill number yet, but it's coded 22-07574. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bill 22-07574 is a topic, affects a topic that this committee has heard over the years, and that is the Robert Street corridor in West St. Paul. And as some of you know, that is a state highway that the city of West St. Paul incurred significant debt over the last several years in the reconstruction for that. One particular component of that were the street lights and safety lights that were installed on that, and that on a state highway is clearly a state responsibility. And so what this bill does is goes partway in restoring and repaying some of the debt for the installation of those street lights on a state highway. I have with me today West St. Paul City Councilor Julie Eastman to give a little bit of detail on the bill and the need.
Councilor Eastman, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Julie Eastman, council member for the City of West St. Paul. I've been a resident of West St. Paul for 29 years. Trunk Highway 952A, which is also known as Roberts Street in West St. Paul, is a 2.5 mile roadway between Annapolis Avenue, which borders St. Paul to the north, and Mendota Road, which borders Invergrove Heights to the south. The reconstruction of Trunk Highway 952A was completed in 2018 at a cost of approximately $46 million, including construction, engineering, and acquisition of easements and rights of way. Within this project was replacement of 11 traffic signals. Two of these 11 signals were replaced by state funds. The remainder were paid for by the property taxpayers of West St. Paul. These traffic signals are owned by the state, and the true cost for those traffic signals is $2.6 million. Today, West St. Paul is requesting $520,000 in state funding to partially repay bonds issued for the traffic signals installed on Robert Street. A $520,000 allocation would increase the state's cost for this $46 million project from $8 million to $8,520,000, less than 19% of the total project cost. Minnesota Statute 16A.86 Subdivision 4 typically requires the state to pay at least 50% of the cost of improvements to state highways. The impact on our property taxpayers is this. The bonds issued for this project by the City of West St. Paul totaled $22 million. $16 million of those bonds are still owed. The city makes bond payments of approximately $1.8 million per year to retire this debt and will do so for the next 10 to 15 years. $1.8 million in bond payments equals 10% of our city's tax levy and results in our city's property tax rate being approximately 15% higher than our neighboring or similarly situated communities. Thank you for your time this morning. Are there any questions I can answer?
Seeing no questions, thank you, Council Member, and thank you, Chair Hansen, for coming by. Next on the agenda, House File 2565, Chair Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the Capital Investment Committee. House File 2565 is a request for just under $1.1 million for a renovation of five sites collectively known as Historic Cook County. Today I have with me Ms. Mara Erickson to explain the specifics of this bonding request. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Erickson, please identify yourself and proceed.
Hi, good morning. I'm Maria Erickson, the president of the Cook County Historical Society. I'm with Katie Clark, who is the executive director. Thank you so much for hearing us this morning. The Cook County Historical Society's collections contain five historical sites, three on the National Register of Historic Places, and nearly 30,000 artifacts, all of which require resources for preservation as well as programming to share the history with the estimated 1 million people who visit our county each year. Our cultural landscape is rich, and we want to save our sites and artifacts in order to show evidence of the people, industries, and interactions that came before, all of which we can relate back to the history of Minnesota. To move forward with our long-range strategic and facilities plans, we have partnered with the Minnesota Historical Society, the Minnesota State Historic Preservation Office, Grand Portage Tribal Historic Office, and other entities in order to determine essential stabilization and structural work for our buildings, as well as collaborative storage needs within the county. Historic structure reports, emergency planning, civil engineering plans, preservation recommendations, archaeological surveys have all been done in preparation for the needed work. Currently, several of our sites have urgent needs that require sufficient funding beyond our budget capacity. Funding from the appropriations bond would enable us to protect structural integrity, ensure preservation, and save the artifacts of the region. It is an exciting time to invest in this Northeast Minnesota Lake Superior regional history before it's gone. We thank you for hearing us. We invite you to visit us at any time, and we look forward to your support. Do you have any questions?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Ms. Erickson. Could you be a little specific as to what these historic sites are?
Ms. Erickson.
We have the Historical Museum, which was built in 1896, which was the original lightkeeper's house. We have the Chippewa City Church, one of the last remaining elements of the Anishinaabe's Chippewa City Village, built in 1895. That one in particular needs stabilization to prevent further deterioration, correct drywall, splaying walls, foundation issues, and moisture issues. We have the Bally's Blacksmith Shop, which was built in 1911, which chronicles the economic regression from 1911 to 1990s through the work of three generations of Bally's blacksmiths. We have the Johnson Heritage Post Art Gallery, which is designed to reflect the original trading post from 1906 on the same site. That offers a permanent collection of regional artists, hosts 24 exhibits of local and regional artists throughout the year. We have the 1930s replica fish house and a 1935 fishing tug Niji, which are maritime assets that educate about commercial fishing and industry from the late 1880s to the 1950s. And then We are working on building archival storage. We have purchased a lot for that. And then we're hoping to eventually get the Coast Guard station for a maritime exhibit.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Ms. Erickson. We do run money through the Historical Society through Legacy in addition to bonding. Have you made requests of the Minnesota Historical Society for Legacy funding?
Ms. Erickson.
We have researched that. Do you have more information on that?
We have over the years for different portions of the building projects and different archaeological surveys or historical structures report. We have reached out and used some granting from the Minnesota Historical Society.
Can you identify yourself for the record, please?
I'm sorry. I'm Katie Clark, the executive director of the Cook County Historical Society.
Thank you, Ms. Clark. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just commenting, in my area, we have made requests of the Historical Society for historic building restoration and have been successful with that. I would suggest that you also pursue that avenue. What was the, Ms. Erickson, maybe I missed it. What was the amount you're asking for?
Ms. Erickson.
Thank you. We are asking for $1.1 million approximately.
Right.
Ms. Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ms. Erickson.
Thank you, Ms. Erickson. And thank you, Representative Eklund, for coming by to present your bill. Next on the agenda, we have House File 4116, Representative Hassan. I understand that you have an amendment for reference, the DE1 amendment. Do you care to explain it, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Good morning, everyone. The amendment is just to get the bill in the shape that I prefer.
Okay, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to present House File 4116, which is the East Phillips Neighborhood Institute Fund, which is about roughly $7 million ask. East Phillips is one of the most diverse neighborhoods in the state. About 71% of its roughly 4,700 residents are people of color, indigenous community. According to Minnesota Compass, nearly one-third of this members live below the poverty line. East Phillips is a traditional landing ground for immigrants in Minneapolis. Today, it has a large population of East African, Latinx, African American, and Native American residents. The vision for this project is to convert a massive warehouse into a community-owned site for indoor farming, local small business, a coffee shop, a bike shop, and affordable housing units. With that, Mr. Chair, I have two testifiers, Dean DeValles and Joe Fatile, to explain the project more.
Mr. DeValles, please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning. Joe, do you wish to lead the way and then I will follow?
Sure thing, Dean. Thank you so much, distinguished members, and we appreciate the opportunity to describe this bill and the work that we're doing. As Representative Hodan Hassan had described, East Phillips is the home of Minneapolis's most diverse community, but also one of its poorest, with the average income being $32,000, with the number dropping to about $10,000 in Little Earth, which is about half a mile away from the site location. What we're trying to do is build a economic hub to spearhead the entrepreneurial spirit of the neighborhood while also creating the avenue for wealth building for generations. What we would do with this site is make it locally owned by the community through shares. We have plans already in place. What we need now is commitment from the state to help us make this a reality. What we saw through this pandemic is, local food stuff as well as local jobs is really something we're losing out to competition, but more importantly, it's something we need to be investing in, especially our BIPOC communities with the reports that are coming out. East Phillips is a very polluted area. It's been a place of exception, but with this project, we are confident that we can make it an exceptional place. And I'm happy to take questions, but Dean, I think you're next.
Yes. And Mr. Chair, if possible, Cassie Holmes was able to make it. I would like to transfer some of my time to her so she may introduce herself. She's a resident of Lillooet and this project greatly impacts her. So Cassie, are you available to speak right now?
Ms. Holmes, please identify yourself and proceed.
My name is Cassandra Holmes. I just want to say thank you and hello to all my relatives and for giving us this opportunity. I just want to talk about the importance of us being successful with the help of all of you folks and anybody who supports us, is that I have lost a child to environmental injustice, to a disease he was not born with. We are losing people every day here. We have a lot of health disparities. This ideal, this vision is a very good thing, and it will bring opportunity, and it will bring so much to our people here in this community, and I believe it will change the dynamics of our community from being this poor community to ownership and really learning and giving us the opportunity to start paving the way for our future generations to have a long way of life here. If we're not successful, fearful that the people living here will have shorter lifespans and also than we already have. And then also, like, it would just be, I'm sorry, I'm really emotional, but we would not survive this here if we're not successful. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Holmes. Mr. DeVallis, a minute.
Thank you. Yes, thank you so much. This project is really going to be one that's going to set a new precedent of how community development occurs. The heart and soul of this is going to be owned by the community. And the idea is that it'll start allowing to create intergenerational wealth within the East Phillips community. It sets a pattern for future developments, such as a lake, the development at the Kmart site, the Upper Harbor, the FERC site. Because not only is the wealth of real estate within the developer and with the development, but with the residents of the neighborhood too. So this creates a major, major precedent that will really start create a greater distribution wealth and economic opportunity. To give you a bad or good example, I look at it, the Green Bay Packers, for example, is owned by the community. There's a great pride of ownership. It obviously helps. There's a good team that comes with it. But still, that pride of ownership and that wealth building that came with that opportunity and having that team there owned by the community creates tremendous pride. We are building the same model, which is going to be managed by a nonprofit board, owned by the residents and the tenants of the building. And we also have the outside investors who have already stepped up and committed to this. So through the hard work of the community, we are well underway with this project and well organized with it. So we appreciate the opportunity being heard. And we look forward to really creating a great demonstration for Minnesota what community economic development looks like. Committee members, thank you, and Chair, thank you so much for giving us time to be heard.
Thank you, today. Mr. DeVallis. Mr. Vattel, can you identify yourself for the record, please?
Apologies. Joe Vital, community organizer located in Powderhorn.
Chair Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I didn't want to interrupt him, but we have to amend the DE1.
So the DE1 amendment is for reference only, Chair Murphy?
Oh, thank you.
Okay, Representative Erdahl.
Excuse me, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, but I was trying to take my hand down, not put it up.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Representative Hassan. Next on the agenda is House File 4514. Representative Hassan, please proceed. Representative Hassan, you're on mute right now.
I'm sorry. You would think after 2.5 years, we've learned how to unmute ourselves. thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 4514 is a $3 million ask for Isuron's building improvement and renovation. Isuron is a Somali word for a woman who takes care of herself. It's a grassroots organization working for the health and connectedness of Somali women and girls so they and their family can thrive in Minnesota and globally. It's no surprise that this entity helps women and girls build their own health and wellness, economic self-sufficiency, community engagement, and leadership. And this entity's building is at the heart of Lake Street. With that, Mr. Chair, I have, I'll let Mary Turner and Ramla Elmi to explain further details what the ask is for.
Ms. Turner, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, for allowing me to speak to House File 4514. My name is Mary Turner, and some of you might know as me as president of Minnesota Nurses Association, but what you don't know is that for the past 6 years, I have been the chair of the board of directors of ISRUN. ISRUN was founded in 2010 and is a Somali woman-led, community-driven nonprofit, which is motivated by the belief that all women and their families deserve to be healthy and have a strong voice. As Representative Hassan said, a woman who cares for herself is what ISRUN means. We believe empowered women are the key to building a thriving community. ISRUN focuses on enhancing their assets and strengths to advocate for their own physical, mental, social, and financial well-being. We are doing an amazing job. Just as an example, the first year of the pandemic, we gave out $2 million worth of rent assistance and delivered 200,000 pounds of food. We are also not just focused in Minneapolis. We serve people all over the state of Minnesota. However, our ask for $3 million would allow ISRU to renovate our building to improve program delivery, provide additional privacy for legal and mental health clients and staff, and reconfigure space for cooking demonstrations and our doula training. Now I'd like to introduce program coordinator Ramla Elmi to provide additional background information. Thank you.
Ms. Elmi, please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. I am Ramla Elmi, Program Coordinator for ISRUN. At ISRUN, we assist more than 1,000 women and families every year with healthcare and mental health support, legal assistance, culturally specific food, youth programs, and more. Although we are based in South Minneapolis, we support clients across Minnesota. For example, families using our food shelf last year came from 310 different zip codes. In our rental assistance program, 60% of participants were Somali, 30% were African-American, and 10% were from other categories. Despite our state's relatively strong economy, we are still seeing exceptional demand for our services. Our headquarters building in Minneapolis was built in 1932 and is in need of significant updates. Funding this project would be valuable use of taxpayer funds because our organization improves the lives of community residents through our halal food shelf, home ownership training, financial coaching, mental health clinic, legal clinic, youth leadership development program, grassroots advocacy, and other resources. ISRUN is in our 12th year serving Minnesotans, and we look forward to helping many more people with your support. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Elmi, and thank you, Representative Hassan, for bringing your bill forward. Next on the agenda, House File 4589, Representative Lissagard.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I do have a testifier that's going to go, but first I would just like to say that, a few years ago, we passed the first Minnesota TV and film tax credit, and it is an incredible opportunity to diversify our economy up north, and this project is going to help build the foundation for more projects to come to northern Minnesota and across the state. So with me, I have Stephanie Scraba, the city administrator of Chisholm.
Ms. Scraba, please identify yourself and proceed.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Scraba, city administrator for the city of Chisholm, and I appreciate your time today. Representing the City of Chisholm, I'm pleased to be here today to support this investment in our city and the Iron Range of Minnesota. It was not that long ago that the Lost 40 Studios team started working out of our space attached to City Hall. They arrived as an interesting group. Carl Gajdoszek was a television showrunner of Stranger Things and is behind films such as Oblivion with Tom Cruise and The Kingsman, which is still in theaters right now. Matt Roy and Nick Swedlin have been developing crew and making films in northern Minnesota for years. The entire company is now comprised of five filmmakers, all of whom are Minnesota residents, who brought us the idea of creating an ongoing and sustainable film industry presence on the Iron Range for years to come. Since that time, we've seen a flow of production come to our city and our area. Productions hiring our residents as crew, creating a new kind of job flow in Chisholm, and bringing with it spends that have enriched our local businesses and expanded our city's identity. While all economic expansion can create growth, we've seen how having film production come to our city and region has wide and varied economic coattails. Film crews need medics, police, pharmacies, carpenters, painters, drivers, and the hospitality sector, to name a few. While these are the direct beneficiaries of this kind of investment, there is also a tourism value in having the beauty and dignity of our region expressed in film and TV across the nation and the world. Finally, the reason we are all here is that our city is located inside three zones of film incentives, and we happen to have what is potentially the largest soundstage in Minnesota. Already, Lost 40's home base at this stage is bringing in over $2 million of the $5 million in regional spending this year. Their second of five films slated for this year is preparing to shoot as we speak. However, the Chisholm stage is far from state of the art, and until it can be improved, the level and continuity of investment in film, TV, and advertising it can bring will be capped. Quite simply, what is already a successful beginning cannot grow without investment in this space. Larger films, backed by more stable entertainment studios and networks, expect a facility that can support their customary workflow. In fact, one irony of the current situation is that the small budget projects currently at work have less ability to take advantage of the space than the larger counterparts Lost 40 has waiting to come work in our area. The ask represented in the bill before you isn't looking for funds to seed something and then see if it takes root. Lost 40 Studios is already a welcome part of our community and is building a workforce in our area, both through the film they produce and a series of workforce development workshops they are holding. In short, the working relationship between Lost 40, the city, and people of Chisholm is alive and well. We believe that updating the Lost 40 studio space in Chisholm will continue an exciting new chapter in our city and region's history as we urge you to support this growth. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Ms. Grabow. Are you the only testifier, or is Mr. Gajuszek testifying too?
I'm here to answer any questions, but I don't have prepared remarks.
Okay. Seeing no questions, thank you, Representative Lissagard, for this presentation. Next on the agenda, House File 4484. Representative Lissagard.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. The 148th Fighter Wing has been an important and strategic partner in Northeast Minnesota. In recent years, the 148th National Guard has been called countless times to protect, defend, and restore order in our state, nation, and internationally. With me today, I have Ms. Jennifer Gaddy, former 148th National Guard member, chair of the Military Affairs Committee for the Duluth Area Chamber of Commerce. Please welcome our testifier.
Ms. Gaddy, please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Jennifer Gaddy. I am the chair of the Duluth Area Chamber of Commerce's Military Affairs Committee and a retired member of the 148th Fighter Wing. The Duluth Area Chamber of Commerce is one of the state's largest chambers, serving over 1,000 members. Our footprint allows us to be an influential regional chamber advocating for investments and policies that will benefit the economies, businesses, and communities of northeastern Minnesota. The Duluth Chamber's unique Military Affairs Committee promotes and supports the economic impacts of all local branches of the military, including the 148th Fighter Wing's Duluth Air National Guard Base. Duluth has been home to the 148th Fighter Wing's Bulldogs since the unit was reactivated in 1948 following the end of World War II. We are proud to host the Bulldogs and proud of their mission to protect America's global interests and defend our homeland, with exceptional people, aircraft, equipment, and capabilities. Today, the 148 flies the newest and most capable F-16s in the entire U.S. Air Force fleet and is trained to provide suppression and destruction of enemy air defense. The 148th is also a NORAD Aerospace Control Alert Trained Flying Wing capable of defending the air sovereignty of North America when tasked. Additionally, the 148th executes a state mission within the Minnesota National Guard to support Minnesota's domestic operations response efforts. The MAC recognizes the significant contributions of the 148th Fighter Wing to our region's economic health and welfare. In fact, the annual economic impact of the 148th Fighter Wing is $96 million, and they are Duluth's eighth largest employer with over 1,100 total personnel. Consequently, many of the Fighter Wing's airmen are also employed by our chamber members in their civilian careers and have family members that contribute immense value to our region's communities and economy. Investment into the 148th Fighter Wing's Duluth Air National Guard base would demonstrate the state of Minnesota's commitment to supporting the men and women of the 148th and ensuring the wing's continued economic value to northeastern Minnesota. We recognize the state of Minnesota has never asked more of our citizen airmen and our citizen soldiers in the Minnesota National Guard than it has these last few years. We have seen military members from Duluth deployed not only overseas on combat deployments, but mobilized away from their employers and families here in our state to respond to civil unrest, provide security around criminal trials, provide security for the presidential inauguration, administer COVID-19 testing sites, and even be mobilized to support our long-term care facilities during the pandemic. We recognize that is certainly not what many join the military to do, but we are grateful for their service to our communities and our state. So, airmen of the 148th Fighter Wing execute both their federal and state missions from Duluth. We are proud to host them and proud to support continued investment in safe and modern infrastructure that positions them well for future missions and ensures a long-term presence in our community. So in conclusion, on behalf of the Duluth Area Chamber of Commerce, our 1,000 members and Military Affairs Committee, I'm here today to support the passage of House File 4484, which requests funding for the removal of decades-old single-bay aircraft shelters and the construction of new universal aircraft shelters for use at the Duluth Air National Guard base. I will also note that the Duluth City Council has passed a unanimous resolution of support for this investment as well. Our community is committed to advocating for the 148th Fighter Wing in order to retain the base as the local employer and economic driver of our community that it is today, as well as to do our part to ensure the 148th has the infrastructure it needs to continue executing both its federal and state missions from Duluth for decades to come. I'm available for any questions. Thank you.
Director Kerr, are you here to testify too, or only for technical questions?
Mr. Chair, I do have just a couple of comments, if I may. I would like to point out that, well, this is not an agency initiative. We did plan on bringing this forward next year. And I wanted to point out that the real crux of this is a trip that the committee took to the Duluth Military Affairs Committee took to Washington, D.C. a few years ago, where they had an audience with a very senior civilian leader in the Air Force, and they asked her directly what Minnesota could do to ensure the longevity of the 148 Fighter Wing in Duluth, potentially in a new airframe. And she responded, if the state and local community showed their commitment by investing in infrastructure in Duluth that would support the future aircraft stationing there, that would be very favorably considered as we go through the competitive process to determine what fighter will replace the F-16s that are on the ground. We don't think this is an imminent threat, but we think that we have to play a long game here and make sure that we're putting ourselves in the best position possible to be competitive in the future. So the agency does support this request, Mr. Chair, and we hope you can support it. Thank you.
Director, can I have you identify yourself for the record?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I know better than that. My name is Don Kerr. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs. I apologize.
Thank you, Director Kerr. And thank you, Representative Lisgar, for your presentation. Next on the agenda, House File 3978, Representative Christensen. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. In October of 2021, the Washington County Heritage Center had its grand opening. It was a well-attended, huge success, actually, and we enjoyed a mesmerizing Native American drumming ceremony. The mission of the center is to preserve, protect, and share the history of Washington County. The public side of the center is now open, but now we are in need of dollars to improve our storage and preservation area. The cost of the project is $1.2 million, and our ask in House File 3978 is $600,000. The Heritage Center will cover half of the project. So, Mr. Chair, members, I'm going to introduce my testifier, Ryan Collins, who is on the board of the Heritage Center. Brent Peterson is here, the executive director of the Washington County Historical Society, and he's available to answer any questions about House File 3978. Thank you.
Mr. Collins, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members, and Representative Christensen for authoring this bill. Thank you also to Representatives Wozlowick, Lilly, and Detmer for signing on. My name is Ryan Collins. I'm the Vice President of the Board of Directors of the Washington County Historical Society. I am here with our Executive Director, Mr. Brent Peterson. Washington County is the gateway to Minnesota, offering a shared history with all Minnesotans. The land that is now Washington County has a story to tell, from the Dakota Oyate, the Anishinaabe, those from Europe, Africa, Central America, and Asia. One day, our own story, as well as the story of future generations, will also be a part of this legacy. History doesn't just come from textbooks. Artifacts provide meaningful interaction with the past. In October 2021, the Washington County Heritage Center opened with a 12,000 square foot space with exhibit galleries, a research center, and an education space that is bigger than my middle school classroom. Our galleries include exquisite Native American beadwork from the Ojibwe, black baseball in Minnesota, highlighting Bud Fowler, who played in Stillwater in 1884 and is about to enter the Baseball Hall of Fame. Early photography, fashion, pioneer life, as well as the lumber industry of the late 19th and early 20th century. We are now moving beyond our first phase, and we ask for your help. Preservation of artifacts is a vital part of this process, and we are seeking the space and equipment to properly do that. When an item is donated to our organization, it is expected that we will preserve it in perpetuity. Our current storage space, located on the property of the Warden's House Museum, the surviving remnant of the territorial prison, is full. We simply have no available space. While phase two may not be as flashy as the first, it is the most important for our mission of preserving, promoting, and disseminating the history of Washington County. We worked with the Minnesota Historical Society to ensure that our plans meet proper preservation standards. Our storage area will be 4,000 square feet and will cost approximately $1.2 million to complete. Our roof insulation must increase from 3 inches to 10 inches, which is the industry standard for appropriate insulation. Also included are movable shelving, proper storage containers, and 8 new HVAC units on the roof to provide adequate temperature and humidity control. As an educator, I understand the importance of ensuring that history includes all voices, especially those that have been underrepresented in the past. We have a shared legacy as Minnesotans, a legacy that begins with the Dakota and Ojibwe, the original inhabitants, to you and I, and those who will come after us. On behalf of the Washington County Historical Society, we ask for your support of House File 3978 so we may continue to provide this for generations to come. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Collins. And seeing no questions, thank you, Representative Christensen, for bringing your bill forward. Actually, we do have a question. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the same question that I had earlier, wondering if they have contacted the Minnesota State Historical Society or the Legacy Fund to try to access some money.
Mr. Collins.
Yes, we have indeed. We've been turned down twice, being told that new construction is not covered under that, but we will be applying again for a grant this upcoming year.
Representative Erdahl.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Christensen, and thank you, Representative Erdahl, for the question. Next on the agenda, House File 4547, Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. House File 4547 asks for $4.2 million of general bonds for a grant to Three Rivers Park District to design, engineer, construct, furnish, and equip the Mississippi Gateway Regional Park development. And Mr. Chair, I will yield the rest of my time to my testifiers.
I have Ms. D. Jornet. Please identify yourself and proceed. for Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, thank you. My name is Bo Carlson. I'm the superintendent of Three Rivers Park District. I apologize, Commissioner DeJarnette was going to join us this morning, but thank you for the time and thank you for the opportunity to present our information on Mississippi Gateway. Mississippi Gateway Park is a partnership between Three Rivers Park District and the City of Brooklyn Park. The project is redeveloping parkland owned by Three Rivers and partnering with Brooklyn Park in a new park that will invite everyone to explore nature and connect with the Mississippi River. The project grew out of a comprehensive master plan process that involved over 1,200 community members and asked them to shape the park features that would invite them to discover, explore, and learn about nature on the river itself. Just for some context, the location of Mississippi Gateway Park is on the Mississippi River in the city of Brooklyn Park, right at the Coon Rapids Dam. So a site that's familiar probably to the members of the committee and the investment that the state has made in developing the dam as a carp barrier on the Mississippi River. This project is the first significant capital investment in this park in more than 40 years, and it fits perfectly with Three Rivers Park District's vision that every person can connect with nature every day. Mississippi Gateway will welcome everyone, no matter their comfort level with nature, and will encourage people to explore the outdoors at their pace with free or low-cost activities. We anticipate the new Mississippi River Gateway Regional Park will be a jewel of both the Three Rivers system and the system of Brooklyn Park as well. It'll be a favorite place for residents of the Twin Cities metro area, as well as visitors from greater Minnesota to connect with the mighty Mississippi and enjoy the outdoors. It's one of the few places in the metro area where people can actually wade into the waters of the Mississippi and enjoy the site. I want to talk a little bit about the detail of House File 4547. So if you recall, 2 years ago, legislature provided $5.5 million in the omnibus bonding bill for this project. We're grateful for that support, and the appropriation closed a critical funding gap that allowed us to move forward with this over $35 million park redevelopment. We're here today to ask for your support to fill another critical funding gap in the project. And this one was really caused by the inflationary increases to construction materials that have taken place over the past 2 years and are continuing today. When we budgeted for this project back in 2018, we couldn't predict how much the world would change in such a short period of time, beginning in 2020. We budgeted for modest inflationary increases. However, the current inflationary increases we're seeing have far surpassed anything we foresaw prior to the start of COVID-19. We're seeing rates right now that are looking close to 15% as far as materials and labor costs. Unfortunately, this has left us with a funding gap of $4.2 million for the project. We're seeking this additional bonding appropriation to fill this gap and make sure the project continues on schedule. Key features that will be built in the next coming years will include the Mississippi Gateway Center with classroom space and a visitor center to enjoy and invite everybody to the park itself, a treetop trail, and a South Pond Learning Lab. We're excited about how all these improvements will help people discover nature in the river and will allow us to expand our programming for school groups and for the public itself. To echo earlier comments, this project will help everyone who visits the park connect with the Mississippi River and nature. We thank you for your continued support of this project and support of the Mississippi Gateway Regional Park and your consideration of our request. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson, and thank you, Representative Vang. Seeing no question, appreciate you coming by. Next on the agenda, House File 4685, Representative Feist, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Corner House is a nationally accredited children's advocacy center with a 30-plus year history of creating and training on evidence-based practices. It is a successful example of partnering with child protection, county agencies, and law enforcement to provide a collaborative response for children who disclose abuse. Notably, Corner House is a globally recognized expert training organization with over three decades of experience pioneering a continuum of best practices in interviewing children and vulnerable adults. The funding request of $1.2 million would cover construction on Corner House's new location in St. Anthony, where it will have the additional infrastructure support to dramatically expand its children and family services, expand its geographic reach, and provide a platform for prevention and mental health services in both rural and urban Minnesota. I will now turn things over to Mitzi Hobot, Executive Director of Corner House. Thank you.
Ms. Hobot, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Representative Feist. Good morning, everyone, and thank you, Chair Lee and committee members. As Representative Feist said, I'm Mitzi Hobart, Executive Director of Corner House. We couldn't be more excited about an opportunity to be expanding in St. Anthony. We're thrilled to be expanding our geographic reach and regional significance. Corner House isn't merely asking for our capital cash investment in this project, but instead we see this pivotal project investing in a solution for families cycling in and out of child protection, and a solution for children who have been impacted by trauma to recover and thrive simply by expanding our space. A major driver of this expansion is the need to serve more children. Every year, about 36,000 of Minnesota's children are connected to a strained and maltreatment report. And every year, 67% of reports considered at moderate to high risk for safety were also thought to not need ongoing child protection services to promote safety, permanency, and well-being. And unfortunately, we know that so many of these children will have a subsequent report of abuse within the next 12 months. We know that children's advocacy centers like Corner House are the solution. By integrating best practices tested over three decades that include trauma-informed and language-accessible services, families supported by Corner House are much less likely to have a recurring incident of maltreatment. Children's trauma symptoms are identified, services are escalated as needed, and ongoing specialized mental health therapies result in improved well-being. Parents have the knowledge and skills they need to provide a safe and supportive home, all of which improves school readiness, school performance, and since 40% of the children we support are adolescents already engaged in or about to enter the workforce, our support fosters successful transition to employment. Investment in this capital project will have immediate impact. By doubling our forensic interview rooms, we can respond to 300 more children a year in just this service area. The build out of training rooms means we can train many more law enforcement officers and child protection workers to improve investigations. And these rooms serve as a dual purpose and double as group therapy and community events in the evening, supporting thousands more families every year. This location improves our ability to host evening therapy appointments for children in school during the day, and the space allows us to expand our geographic range. We're not shooting to serve a single community here, but instead are working to build an integrated system. As I mentioned at the beginning, this project is ready and we couldn't be more excited and honored to expand such important work. Thank you so much for your time and consideration, and I'm available for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Hobart. Seeing no question, thank you, Representative Feist, for bringing this bill forward. Next on the agenda, House File 4755, Representative Navani.
Thank you for hearing my bill, Chair Lee. The bill 4755 is a request for $2 million. The appropriation is for the bond process to the Public Facilities Authority for a grant to the City of Elk River to decommission a failed subsurface sewage treatment system in the northeast part of the city, remediate associated soil contamination, and acquire easements. It's also going to include the design and construction of a lift station that will connect the existing low-pressure sanitary force main in the northeast part of the city to the city's existing sewer system. The appropriation does not require state, non-state contribution. And for technical assistance, I'd like to introduce Calvin Portner, who is the city administrator for the City of Elk River, who can give you more details.
Mr. Portner, welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thanks for taking time to consider our request. My name is Cal Portner. I'm the city administrator for the City of Elk River. I guess you can see we're kind of hoping for a Hail Mary today. The Rolling Hills development consists of 28 property owners in the far northeast corner of Elk River. They're one of seven community cluster type sewer systems that we have here in Elk River, where each homeowner has their own septic tank and the effluent is pumped to a community drain field. These developments were constructed in the early 2000s. Since that time, one development has reconstructed their drain field and another has connected to the available municipal sewer line. At least one other development has inquired about connecting beyond Rolling Hills. When these systems were first proposed, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency had concerns and had required monitoring wells to monitor the effectiveness and long-term operation of the treatment system since they were a new process. Rolling Hills system is currently failing and they are in dire need of a remedy. Their drain field is overcharged after taking on as much as 30% more effluent as designed due to inflow and infiltration from their septic tanks, many of which are very close to the water table. The city has worked with the Homeowners Association, the University of Minnesota Extension Service, MPCA, the Department of Agriculture, and an independent engineering firm to find options and seek remedies for this small community. Their independent engineering consultant found the most cost-effective option is to connect the city sewer, which is located approximately 5 miles from the development. With only 28 properties to share in the cost of development, the cost at which was our earliest estimate was $2.6 million. It comes to about $93,000 per property. For reference, the last development that connected to the city paid about $25,000 per property. The Elk River City Council has approved the city managing the improvement and providing a longer-term low and no interest assessment to ease the financial burden on our residents, most of whom will also need to replace the septic tanks as well as to pay for that service connection. During our due diligence period, the development sought relief through the MPCA, looking for grants to assist with them. And in your packet, you should have an email from Mr. Bill Dunn from the MPCA Clean Water Revolving Fund Coordinator, who stated that this scored very, very high in their scoring process. Unfortunately, the only thing they had available were loan funds, and those would be financed at a higher rate and more administrative costs than what the city would do on behalf of the residents. So as you can see, these 28 property owners are pretty much at your mercy. They face either paying for a connection, which is a large share of the value of their homes, and even some have considered abandoning their homes. Making the connection to municipal services will provide a long-term solution for this community. It'll resolve the immediate impact to the adjacent wetlands and water aquifer, and provide equity with other community cluster systems who connect or replace their systems and ensure the long-term viability of these properties. Thanks again for your sincere consideration, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I heard reference to PFA earlier. I am wondering of the testifier, do they have a ranking on the PFA system?
Mr. Portner.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the email from Mr. Dunn stated that the project is listed in a 2023 PPL at 85 points, which is well within the historic public facilities loan fundable range. I hope that answers your question.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, it's important for us to know if it's in the fundable range, so thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Seeing no other questions, thank you, Representative Navani, for coming by. Next on the agenda, House File 4712, Representative Kitoza Wathuni.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for hearing and taking the time to listen to House File 4712, a high priority Minnesota Riverbank stabilization project at the southern border of Eden Prairie. This area is just west of the Bloomington Ferry Bridge that connects Hennepin County to Scott County. The riverbank in Eden Prairie is currently unstable due to soil erosion and a downstream stormwater pond. This, combined with bluff development and ongoing erosion from the Minnesota River, have created a perfect storm in the destabilization of the riverbank. The Lower Minnesota River Watershed District is seeking $4.6 million to stabilize the Area 3 riverbank. The watershed will be working to meet 50% of the project funding with Hennepin County, the City of Eden Prairie, and other various grants. I have Linda Loomis with me today, the Executive Director of the Lower Minnesota River Watershed District, and she'll be able to describe the project in broader detail. Thank you.
Ms. Loomis, please identify yourself and proceed.
Yes, I am Linda Loomis. I am the administrator for the Lower Minnesota River Watershed District. And thank you, Representative Katitha Watoon, and thank you to committee members for allowing us to testify. This area first became, the Watershed District was made aware of it back in the early 2000s when a city trail failed because of slope erosion. And since that time, we've done quite a bit of investigation of the causes and what's going on in this area. And part of the reason that we are asking the state for money is the increase in the water flow in the Minnesota River that's coming from agricultural and increased urbanization upstream that's increased the water flow is part of the contributing factor to this slope failure. And as the watershed district, we are also responsible for working with the Corps of Engineers to maintain the navigation channel in the Minnesota River. And typically what happens there is the Corps of Engineers dredges the river to maintain the navigation channel to serve the agricultural interests there in Savage with Cargill and CHS, and so that we can keep the channel open. The Corps does the dredging and we accept the dredge material. And we've seen an increase in the dredge that we have to handle every year. And this area is a significant contributor to that material. And so we would are asking the state's assistance in helping us manage this area to prevent further erosion, protect the private property that's up above, and also reduce the amount of sediment coming into the Minnesota River. And I guess that's, if anyone has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
I'll see no question. Thank you, Representative Cotizo Watun, for coming by to present your bill. Next on the agenda, Chair Murphy, House File 4775.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. House File 4775 is a conveyance bill from the state of Minnesota to the city of Two Harbors for an area around what was at one time going to be a safe harbor and a kind of a marina, but other plans exist today, and so there is not that need for the safe harbor and marina has gone away, but there's prime recreational area land. It's for prime recreational opportunities for the city to provide to their citizens and for visitors to Two Harbors. And last night I got an advisory note from Department of Natural Resources. And so they have more expertise on this subject than I do. But I would like Jennifer Sturbins from Two Harbors and Miranda Pietola to explain it more clearly than I just did.
Ms. Sturbins, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. I'm Jennifer Sturbins and I'm the Community Development Planner for the City of Two Harbors. And hopefully everybody got the packet. There are four parcels that were acquired by a private sale by the DNR years ago. One is a boat launch, one is a parking area, and then there are two green spaces. And what the city desires is to get the two green spaces back for the purpose of development. As Representative Murphy said, it would be for more of a recreational development. You can see that the downtown area is located in close proximity to that waterfront. So our goals would be to stimulate economic growth downtown, promote tourism, and capitalize on the already prevalent regional recreational opportunities. I believe when Senator Bach introduced the bill, there was an amendment that said that the city would, we would be asking for the two green spaces with the option later on to possibly acquire the parking space and the boat launch. The city has no intention right now to, we don't want to do anything with that boat launch in the parking area. Our concept will incorporate those elements. We do plan to apply for some LCCMR funding. We've hired the Costin Group to help us do some lobbying. That is in our North Shore Management Zone, so there is some added layer of protection for that shoreline with setbacks and different things like that. We have the MnDOT Highway 61 project coming up in 2025, so that's quite a big investment. There is potential to reroute some traffic down to that waterfront. As you can see from the handle, we've got Castle Danger on one end. We've got a potential boutique hotel on the other. Those are both, they're located right between our downtown and our waterfront, so they're a great area to kind of bridge some development in between. And I'll take any questions if anybody has them.
Seeing no question, thank you, Ms. Durbin, and thank you, Chair Murphy. Next on the agenda, House File 4489, Chair Murphy.
Mr. Chair, House File 4489 is asking for a state appropriation from bond proceeds for the expansion of our arena facility, of which we have over 40 groups of kids of all ages trying for space on one sheet of ice. But the expansion that I'm most interested in is to make it more ADA accessible for the visitors that come to watch hockey and to participate in other ice sports. Also, from a meeting that I was at on Saturday, I learned that there's no gender specific opportunities for girls at this place, except they don't have a shared locker, or they don't have locker rooms for themselves or the teams that they are competing with on site. At this time, they have to, the girls have to go up two flights of stairs to the attic for to get to their so-called locker room. And this just is not acceptable in today's world. And there are people here to explain the issue in more depth than I did just did. And that Scott Wozniak is here, and maybe David Huddle.
Mr. Huddle, please identify yourself and proceed.
Well, Hermantown Arena Manager. I'm Scott Wotyszak, a community member here in Hermantown. Thank you, Representative Murphy and Mr. Chair. Committee members, Dave and I are here today. As Representative Murphy had said, that we did a needs analysis back in 2018, and we had outgrown our facility at that point. And since that time, our girls program has nearly doubled in the last 4 years, and our facility is not sustainable right now. As Representative Murphy said, our girls program's locker room is upstairs in an old storage room, and the demand that our program has on our current sheet of ice prevents the rest of our community from having an opportunity to use our facility. And today's ask is in addition to the sales tax increase that we're asking our community to vote on this November.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Dave Huddle, Arena Manager. Just to kind of touch on what Scott said, that's exactly what the money would be used for. This addition would also create a second sheet of ice, which is greatly needed in our community. We'd update our locker rooms. We'd update our ice plant. Our locker rooms would be equitable for both the boys and the girls, accessible to the rink on the main floor. Wouldn't have to go up and down the stairs, create a lot of safety issues. We also make the entire building ADA compliant, so we could have other people in the building with wheelchairs, et cetera, which we really lack right now. The additional money, we hope to generate $10.84 million from a 0.5% sales tax. We'll go to the voters this fall. The additional $4 million is because the numbers we are using were generated in 2019. Our city council passed in January 2020 the resolution to put this to a vote of the voters. But since then, with inflationary costs, we feel $4 million is needed to get us to, it's a very modest facility. We're not talking about a rank here is going to see 2,000-3,000 people. We're talking about a sheet of ice and upgrading our current facility so it's more user-friendly. But the $4 million with the inflationary costs right now is greatly needed. So thank you for your time, and both Scott and I are available to ask any questions if you have.
Mr. Huddle, will you please talk a little bit about the groups that we now have playing and where the kids go late at night for practices?
So we have right now, this past season, our community is growing and our hockey program is really flourishing. This past season, our girls high school team finished second in the state of Minnesota, and our boys high school team was the state champions. which is fantastic. And what happens then is our participation even grows more, right? So this fall, we anticipate 400 kids playing, about a quarter of which will be girls, and we just don't have the facilities for them. We open the building, that's my job. We open the building every day before 5 a.m. We close at about midnight. That's 7 days a week, about 362 days a year. That's what we do. Our kids are on. We use every inch of that facility, every available hour. We have two teams practice every day before school. And then after school, they come right in. We go right up till 10 o'clock, and then our adult skaters take over. So we're really, really bursting at the seams. And what this would do, this initiative would give us that second sheet, which alleviate a lot of ice. Our current building is only really a small percentage of our program. We buy all the local ice that's available in the Duluth area, Duluth Superior area, and our association buys that, and that's where our kids go to practice and play their home games. Scott's son is an 11-year-old boy in our community. He probably had four games in our building last year of his 35 games. The rest, even home games, were played in facilities like Amsoil Arena, The Deck, Mars Blakeview Arena, Heritage Center Duluth, Carlton, Minnesota. And a lot of these areas, we're getting their leftovers, so we're getting their late night, early morning ice. So our kids are traveling outside of our community, getting home very late at night. We feel it's affecting their schoolwork, their general overall health. So we're trying to alleviate that. By having that second sheet of ice in our community would be fantastic. And we also have six outdoor sheets. We're really trying to keep our kids in our community, get them to bed on time, get them up for school, and just kind of a healthier environment.
Chair Murphy.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. The girls are the Mirage are the is the championship girls hockey team.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And they work with Proctor, and Proctor's facilities are separate for girls and boys. And they have the home team welcome as well as the visitors team welcome. That's all.
Thank you, Chair Murphy.
Appreciate your consideration.
Thank you, Chair Murphy. Thank you, testifiers, members. That concludes our agenda for today. Really appreciate all the other members and testifiers for coming by. Representative Erdahl.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just wondering, as we proceed the rest of the week, I think that Thursday we're having more bills. There is apparently a meeting scheduled for Friday. Could you please enlighten us as to what the Friday meeting is about?
So the Friday meeting will be to be determined. Representative Erdahl, like I shared with you last week, or before we went on break on our phone call, that we'll be working on a proposal. And, you know, if the speaker and the minority were able to come together for joint targets, that we could have been working together last week to put the proposal together. And at this point, seems like there's no consensus of joint targets. And so the ideal timeline for us will be for myself to roll out the House DFL proposal on Friday. And, you know, things may change as we move along in the process. I'm hopeful that the two leaders could get together and we could get to work and not have to roll out a House DFL-only proposal on Friday. Representative Erdahl.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, that would be my desire as well. You know, we need to work together, obviously, to get a bill done. I, too, have been urging the Speaker and the Minority Leader to get together. And I'm sure that I know there have been a lot of things going on, but they need to meet and help us out with this so that we have a number. You know, what are we doing with general obligation bonds? What are we doing with cash? And then we can move forward. If you present a bill, you know, roll out a DFL bill, it will be met with, shall we say, skepticism. But I will reserve my comments on that for when you actually do it, and hopefully you won't have to do that. We'll be given different direction.
Thank you for that comment, Representative Erdahl. Members, seeing no other comments or questions, we will be back on Thursday, April 21st, to hear more bills on the informational basis only. Thank you, everyone. The meeting is adjourned.